Chapter 35. A Riff in Time. There's music inside you, Amelia Jones, that's aching to be let out. As usual, Miss Mott was right. I know what notes to play. I know because they've been singing in my soul for weeks, maybe even years, like the drip, drip, drip of a leaky pipe. Over time, their power has grown, like a rising flood. There's plenty of anger in me, and I pour it into my flute. Before, when I'd felt this much fury, I pushed it away. Feeling it meant feeling the guilt I was too scared to face, so I'd stuffed it in a box and clamped a lid over it, hoping to find another way. But everything I tried only made things worse. Now, here I am, with nothing but my anger, ugly and hot and true. And this time, I can't be afraid of it. It's power I've kept trapped inside for years, music I've never had the courage to play. But now there's no guilt to hold me back from it. My spell is so big and hungry, it demands more. The magic begins pulling at me, trying to drain my strength away, so I reach deeper, searching, prying up sadness and pain that has been buried for years, flinging it into the spell's ravenous mouth. Things I'd pretended didn't hurt. Moments I'd almost forgotten now come tumbling out of the shadows. Every Father's Day, when Gran tried to distract me by taking me out for ice cream. Career Day at school, when everyone else's dad showed up to talk about their jobs. The father-daughter dance in fifth grade, when I had to awkwardly waltz with the principal, Mr. Hodgkiss. All my birthdays, awards ceremonies, swim meets and basketball games and art shows, the concerts and recitals. I know my dad by the holes he left in my life. I know him by the empty chairs where he should have been sitting. I know him by what he's not. That's what I pour into my spell. My chest aches from feeling so much at once. All the words I've kept bottled up become notes in my flute. The music is everything I am, tight and angry and sad and uneven. It's not a particularly pretty piece, and my playing isn't going to win any competitions. But I've already learned that it's more important to be genuine than to be perfect. As if he can read the words behind the music, my father takes a small step backwards, his lips parting below the edge of his mask. Or maybe he's just reacting to the magic that tumbles from my flute. It comes all at once, no gradual glow or trickle of sparks. Instead, a cascade of light erupts from my instrument and spreads through the air, misty fog the color of violets, smelling of burning plastic. Time magic.
What?
He lifts a hand, glittering purple light pooling on his palm and draining through his fingers.
What is this?
He wants Mom. I'll give him Mom. Just not the way he expects. Take us to her, I tell the music. Show him what he lost. Show him who she was. My magic is like a combination of the time window spell I played in the composing classroom and the memory recall spell Luca D'Alessio created. At least, that's how I want it to play out. As usual, I push my magic in the direction I want it to go, but there's always a point where it takes on a life of its own. As my melody deepens, the lights pouring from my flute begin swirling between me and my dad, a tight, glowing sphere that spins dizzyingly fast.
Enough,
orders my dad.
What are you doing? You'll give me what I asked for, Miss Jones, or your friend will remain in my orchestra for...
He shouts as the ball of light suddenly expands outward, enveloping us both in its hazy glow. My eyes grow wide, and after one final piercing note, I lower the flute, panting. The two of us stand inside a bubble of filmy lavender light, the walls of the sphere translucent and sparkling like a net of stars. Outside the spell, Darby and Mia stand at the stage's edge, Darby reaching up toward me. But something's not right. It's like they're both frozen. Mr. Stewart isn't moving either, nor any of the orchestra members. Outside the bubble, I realize, time has stopped completely. Or rather, we've slipped outside of time.
What is this?
Whispers my dad. He pushes a hand to the wall of the bubble, but though it stretches a bit under his palm, it doesn't break. A network of lights spread outward from his touch, like glowing veins. I don't know, I answer truthfully. It looks a little like the time window. The color and burning plastic smell of the magic is the same. But this is no window. It's more like a snow globe, with my dad and me trapped inside. Hey! Someone shouts. My dad and I both whirl around to see a boy sitting cross-legged on the stage behind us, just inside the bubble's edge. Dressed in a black hoodie and jeans, he's got a violin propped on his lap, and he shakes back his shaggy dark hair to peer at something off stage. Okay, that kid was definitely not there a minute ago. And even weirder, he's see-through. Not like invisible, just kind of hazy, like he's a hologram or a ghost. And what's more, he doesn't seem to see us at all. His eyes pass right through me without a hint of surprise or awareness. My dad's reaction is stronger. He gives a little strained gasp. I can see his teeth clench under the edge of his mask. The boy stands up, pointing his bow like a sword. Come out where I can see you, he orders. His voice sounds wavy, like it's echoing underwater. I know someone's sneaking around back there. I glance at the tattered curtains, which begin to ripple, and then out from behind them steps a girl dressed in overalls and a bright pink headband. At first glance, it's like looking in a mirror, but this girl's hair is darker, and she's shorter than I am. And there's a very familiar flute case slung over her shoulder. Mom. Which means the boy is my dad, Eric. Who are you? The boy demands, lowering his bow but looking at my mom suspiciously. They're both no older than I am, maybe even a little younger. I'm Susie, says the girl. Like the boy, she's slightly see-through. I heard you playing. You're pretty good. What's your name? You're not supposed to be in here. Neither are you. This isn't just any old day. This is the day they met. Right here in this moldy old concert hall. And here I stand, watching my parents meet for the first time, as clear as if I were there. My dad didn't choose this place randomly. It has meaning for him. I look at my dad. He's staring at the pair of kids like they're, well, ghosts. Which they aren't, of course. They're as real as we are, seen through time the way I'd seen my dad in the composing classroom. Only instead of viewing them through a window, we're in their time, or at least halfway there. The two kids can't see us or hear us. It's kind of like a scene from A Christmas Carol, with me, I guess, as the ghost of my parents' past. You shouldn't be in here, young Eric says to young Susie. She shrugs, plopping herself down on the edge of the stage and swinging her legs. Her toes nearly clip Darby in the nose. My friend is still frozen outside the time bubble's walls. I was looking for some place to practice before my audition later. Saw this place, figured it'd be empty. Then I heard your spell. Well, it's my place. I got here first, so you can shove off. Don't you want to know what I'm auditioning for? No. She leans toward him, eyes sparkling. It's called the Mistwick School of Music Craft. It's the most wonderful school in the, I've heard of it, snooty school for snooty kids. Susie raises an eyebrow in an expression so much my mom's that it hurts. Then you should have no problem getting in. Seeing his scowl, she laughs and pats the stage beside her. Come play a duet with me.
Huh? Why?
It'll be fun.
Are you always this annoying?
Are you always this much of a scaredy-butt? Susie takes out the flute, the same flute I'm holding now, and slides the joints together.
I'm not a... How dare you?
She begins playing, but the sound is muted and warped. I can't even tell what spell it is. I think the time spell that brought us here must be breaking down, getting weaker. Their bodies are starting to be more see-through, their edges blurring away. Eric, the younger one, must recognize the music because he relents, raises his violin, and begins playing with her. Within seconds, they're both smiling as their spell takes effect and blue magic begins swirling around them. The walls of the time bubble start shimmering, further proof that the spell is weakening. Outside its bounds, Darby and Mia start moving in really, really slow motion, as if time is just starting to flow again. Darby's fingers push through the air, and Mia's eyes grow wider and wider. We don't have long before the spell breaks completely. My dad doesn't seem to notice the weakening magic around us. Instead, he stares at the two kids on the edge of the stage as they play their duet, their spell conjuring a small ship of glowing magic that sails in circles around them. Slowly, he reaches up and removes his mask. I suck in a breath, a splinter running through me as I see his face for the first time in 8 years. He's got a long nose, sharp cheekbones, dark eyes chiseled deep, and thick black eyebrows that scrunch together. His scruffy beard is short and speckled with gray, and a deep worry line carves down the center of his forehead. How can he look so familiar and so strange at the same time?
How long have you known who I am?
He asks. I swallow hard. Not long. We look at each other for a long minute. And despite everything he's done and how much anger I have for him, in that moment, all I want in the world is for him to... Impossible, silly pictures fill my head. Of all of this going away, and him telling me he's sorry, that he actually loved me all this time, that everything will be different now, and he's going to stay, and we'll make things be okay, and we'll be a family again. Silly, stupid Amelia. Obviously that won't happen. Obviously, he's more broken and messed up than I can imagine. And anyway, it's not like he's just been off on some road trip for the last 8 years. He's the Necromuse. That's not something you just walk away from with an apology and a trip to the ice cream shop. Dad looks back at the kids, his eyebrows pulling even tighter together. If he is sorry, even the tiniest bit, there's no sign of it on his face.
Then you must know why I need that spell.
I know why you want it, I whisper. His jaw is tight, and a vein in his temple visibly ticks.
She was the best thing, the only good thing I ever had.
I look at my mom's past self, making silly faces over her flute while she plays. Me too, I say. But I won't bring her back for you. His hand clenches into a fist as he picks out the word.
Won't.
The time spell is getting weaker by the minute. The kids on the stage are almost completely see-through. She made me promise not to.
You saw her, didn't you, when you composed that ghost-summoning spell?
I nod. She doesn't want to be brought back. Even if I could, and I'm not sure I could, would she come? Are you even the same person she would remember? He gives me a startled look but quickly hides it with a scowl.
You forget. I'm not asking. You'll give me what I want, one way or another. I see now that it has to be you. That's why the others failed me. You're the one who's meant to bring her back. You're connected to her the way no one else can be.
He takes a step toward me. I step back.
You owe me this, daughter.
No, I don't, I say, blinking back tears. I don't owe you anything. Not my magic, not my guilt, not my forgiveness. No, you're the one who owes me. My shout echoes off the thinning walls of the time spell, bouncing back to me all wobbly and warped. My dad stares at me. Today is the day you start paying me back, I say breathless. You'll start by letting me leave with Jai and everyone else in your horrible orchestra. And you'll leave me alone after that. Never look for me, or talk to me, or even think about me. You should be pretty good at that by now. You hate me, after all. He opens his mouth, but no words come out. Finally, his stony expression begins to crack, and I see something beneath. Regret? Shame? Or is he just mad that I won't give him what he wants?
It was more complicated than that,
he mutters.
I don't hate you. That's not why I... You were better off with your grandmother. I'm not a good man. I come from a bad place, bad people. You won't understand. I was better with Susie. Don't you see why I need her? Why the world needs her? She made everything better for everyone. She's the parent you deserve, not me. But she's gone, I say. And you were all I had. Then you left.
Yes,
he replies softly. If you wanted me to help you bring her back, why didn't you just ask me? Why all this? I gesture at the orchestra. Why the lies, the deals, the consequences?
So you'd never have to know who I was,
he murmurs.
What I was. At least not until your mother was back. It was meant to keep you at arm's length, same as all the other guests of the Midnight Orchestra. Safe.
Safe? I give a bitter laugh. If there's one thing I haven't felt these past weeks, it's safe.
I would never harm you, Amelia.
He stumbles over my name, as if it hurts him to say it. I'm as much a stranger to him, I realize, as he is to me. Too late for that, I reply quietly. Maybe if you'd let her go, you could have seen me. He puts his mask back on, his lips parting to speak, but before he can, the walls of the time bubble come crashing down. It's kind of like the way Mia's teleportation bubble burst when we landed in the concert hall, an explosion of magic rippling outward. My mom and dad's childhood figures vanish, washed away in that glittering tide. Then the magic fizzles out, sounding like dying fireworks, all sizzles and pops and smoke. Within moments, the last of my time spell fades into the air, leaving only the faintest scent of burned plastic. Amelia! Darby gasps, suddenly bursting into motion again, along with Mia. Time in the real world resumes, only a split second passing. What? What just happened? My dad and I watch each other warily. What happened, I say slowly, is that we have an understanding, right? Me and my friends are leaving. In fact, everyone is leaving, the whole orchestra. Or, I lean toward my dad and whisper so Darby can't hear. I'll tell everyone your real name. I bet they find you pretty quickly then. The corner of his mouth quirks, as if my threat has only amused him.
Actually, Miss Jones, he says, we are leaving. You and I.
With that, he grabs hold of my arm, pulling me close. Darby yells, trying to climb onto the stage, but Mr. Stewart jumps forward and takes hold of her and Mia. The girls struggle, but it's like being undead has given the old man super strength. He barely flinches when Mia slaps his arm. I'm not giving you what you want, I yell.
On the contrary,
my dad replies.
You already have.